I'm Shay.
And I'm David.
And you're listening to Board on the Air on CFCR, where we talk about board games and board game-related topics. On tonight's show, we'll be discussing what we've been playing, the news, and for our main topic tonight, downtime in board games.
Yes.
What is too much? Is there such a thing as too little? What even is downtime? We'll discuss.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, it's something that a lot of the time gets used as a negative, and I don't think it is always.
Okay.
I think it can be.
Yeah.
But I don't think it is always.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, let's get into what we've been playing.
Yeah. What'd you play? I can say what I played.
Okay.
So, we had game night at Amazing Stories with Mr. Rao on Friday, and it was a lot of fun. And we played Raiders of the North Sea.
Yes.
I almost said Stefan Feld, and that is very incorrect.
Shem Phillips,
thank you. Shem Phillips, we discussed this. You've been calling it the third game of the series when it's actually the second game.
Yes, I found out it's the second game.
The second game of the North series from Shem Phillips. He also does the West Kingdom and South series, and I guess the East will be starting up soon, maybe?
Next.
Yes.
I've talked about it because I like his design.
Yeah. So Raiders of the North Sea is, I will say, is probably the worker placement that actually made me kind of like or realize I liked worker placements. Everdell was a big one for that, but this is more of a crunchy worker placement than Everdell is, with less of other things to do. And yet I still have a really good time playing it. It's a really simple game. You put a worker down and you take that action, and then you pick a worker up and you take that action.
Or you raid.
Yeah. Raid is a separate action. But in general, you're still putting a worker down and picking it up.
Yep.
It's just at the same spot.
Exactly.
You're trying to get resources and money so that you can play cards into your boat. That puts Vikings into your boat. Once you have enough Vikings and you have enough resources, you can go out and raid. And that's going out to the towns, and you get more plunder from those, as well as a different type of worker. We played with a few expansions, so got you some other things as well. And you're going through all this to try and score points.
Yes.
And work your way up to the highest level of raiding, which will then end the game. A few other ways, we played with the Valkyries and we played with the Jarls, which gave you other things to kind of fight and lose cards while you were playing, as well as quests that you could get that were out on the board where you've raided that you could pay for to get more victory points. This game's really solid. It's really easy to play.
Yep.
And
pretty quick teach.
Pretty quick teach. We went back and forth on a few things, but yeah, pretty quick teach, pretty easy to play and learn how to play. And yeah, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's... I find... Excuse me. The base game is good,
mm-hmm.
but I like it with both expansions. We didn't get a lot of Jarls out, but that was just how they were drawn out of the bag.
Yeah, I picked and put out the plunder, which is where the Jarls and Valkyries were. And I picked a lot of Valkyries.
Yeah.
And I picked, in the first pick, three Jarls.
Yeah.
And then I picked two more when I realized I had missed some, but
yeah, so they didn't play or they didn't play as big a factor as they have in the past, but I think it just all the choices don't add extra complexity, they just add more fun. I like this game a lot. I think it's probably my second favorite of his before the new ones came out. South Tigris, those two are pretty darn solid. One day I'll go through like all my Shem Phillips and decide what my top to bottom are.
Right.
Right. But it is right up there because it's the first one I played of his that I just absolutely was engrossed with. And he's one that's really taken worker placement and turned it on its head a little bit. Right. He tries something different each time he does one. So yeah, Raiders of the North Sea. Really solid. One of the guys bought Raiders of Scythia that night to play because it's supposed to be just a tweaked version of Raiders of the North Sea with the expansions.
Cool.
I played Merlin Big Box.
Ooh.
I bought this a long time ago. Yep. It is probably, I think it was near the oldest game on my shelf of shame that are not campaign games. And we took it out to Norm's last week and played it with the Arthur expansion and the Knights of the Round Table expansion. They just added an extra die and another thing to do. Or asymmetric powers. I've only played this a couple of times, have enjoyed it. But with the expansions, I loved it. It was so fun. Just having that extra die. So there's both Merlin and Arthur you're moving around, but everybody is moving them around. So it's when do you move them to get what you want? When do you let somebody else move them to get closer to what you want? Really fun decisions. And it's, at its heart, a roll and move game with some mitigation. You have three dice to move your knight, one dice to move Arthur, one dice to move Merlin. And you're going to play over six rounds. So you move your knight three times, you move Merlin, you move Arthur. Sometimes you'll land on, or you're landing on stuff to do other things. So you move, you take an action, the next person's turn. You do this a bunch, and at the end, whoever has the most points, because you're going to get points for completing contracts and points for every second round. There's a scoring phase where you can get points for area control and for having your tradesmen on the board. The teach isn't that long. It took us, I'm going to say, close to an hour, but it was because none of us had played for a long time, and there was a little bit of refresh to do as I was teaching it. But you're just explaining what the spaces do. That's the only tricky thing in the game. There's nothing, no mini rules to trip you up.
Right.
But that is Merlin from Steffenfeld, one of his better ones.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I played another game.
What'd you play?
I played it by myself.
Touring Machine.
No. Actually, it's the other deduction game that I just got. So for my birthday, my brother got me Archaeologic from a publisher that I can't remember at this point. I think it starts with an L.
Lumos?
Something like that.
Ludicy?
Nah, I don't think so. But yeah, so I got this game for a birthday gift, and I had put it all together, and I was just kind of waiting to take a moment to teach myself how to play it. And so I decided to try that. I think it was last night, actually. I decided to try this game. Yes, it was last night.
Cool.
And it's interesting. So this is a deduction game that has vibes of Turing Machine. You have a card that has a bunch of symbols on it. And when you cover it up with something else, it tells you clues. And what you're trying to do is you have this 5x5 grid in front of you and six buildings. And you're trying to determine how the buildings fit on this map. There's going to be three empty spaces. And all the buildings have different trap, like they have one or two trap symbols on them. And those trap symbols have to be in a specific spot as well. So by asking clues about how many trap symbols are in a row, or how many buildings are in a row, or how many squares of a certain type of building are in a row, or how many empty spaces, by asking that, you are then supposed to kind of determine where those buildings are. So I played it by myself, and just to teach myself the game and figure out how the rules kind of work.
Yeah.
It's harder than Turing Machine. Because it is a logic puzzle in a sense, but
it's not your logic puzzle?
Well, no, it's just with numbers, right? You can cross off the number and be like, okay, I can't have this number for these reasons. Here, you're kind of like, okay, kind of like Sudoku, yeah. Where you can say, okay, in these spaces, this is where this trap could be. And it can't be here because something else crosses it off type thing. And then based on how many buildings are there, you're like, okay, I can only have this many buildings. I'll admit, when I played it, I just asked about the trap tokens. I was like, in these rows and these columns, where are, like, how many trap tokens are here? Or, no, it wasn't even how many. It was, how many and what are they? like which type of trap tokens.
Okay.
And by doing that, and then I actually stole one of the other sheets and put out all of the symbols on it to see where they could possibly be. By doing that and then trying a bunch of different variations, I got the correct building layout.
Okay.
Harder to do if all four people are playing. I did try to do that with a piece of paper as well to draw out the grid, and that didn't work too bad. But that's kind of what I was doing. I did ask a couple times how many buildings are in a certain row, and I'll admit it helped kind of. It gave me an idea of like which buildings could possibly be. Oh, you could also ask. Oh yeah, right. You could ask if there were any empty spaces, and that helped too because you knew if you had to fill a column up or not. But the majority of my questions were, where are the trap things? And once I did that, but even just doing those types of clues, and I thought I was asking a lot of questions, with how the solo player works, I still managed to be like right in the middle of how much time it took.
Okay.
Because that's the map of this, is time tracker around. Like each question costs time. The bigger the question you ask, like the more specific, the longer, more time you take. But it's interesting, and I'm looking forward to playing it again and trying it again and asking more questions to see if maybe those other questions make things easier.
Yeah.
And there is an app with this game, just like Turing Machine, that's supposed to help make a bunch of different
puzzles.
Difference being is that this game uses these big, weirdly shaped cards. I think on the app, it would do it on the app. It doesn't let it. You don't get to like, you know, in Turing Machine where you just put out a different combination of cards. It's not quite like that. The app would be almost instead of, from what I understand. But I didn't actually use it. So that's just my guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was fun. Neat. I'm interested to try it again.
Cool. Let's get into the news.
Shall we? First one. Is a game announcement from Play to Z Games. It's called 23 Knives. You're taking on the role of a Roman citizen that is either loyal to Caesar, not loyal to Caesar, or an opportunist. And throughout the game, you're going to vote on it, two issues that are put in front of you each time they get flipped. And depending on which one wins, it goes into what's called the knife deck. And if at the end of the game, there are 23 or more knives in it, then Caesar dies. If there are less, then he lives. And of course that's each team wants one or the other to happen. The opportunist wants to sway it. So at the end they want to choose like either lives or dies, and then they have power in the aftermath, right?
Okay.
It's interesting sounding. It's not a very pretty looking game in my opinion, but it's kind of an interesting way of, almost semi-cooperative.
Yep.
Only thing that got me is apparently you can eliminate players, and I don't know if that's fully eliminate them or just eliminate them from a round. Unclear. But I'm not a fan of games where maybe you'd be able to eliminate them too early, and then that person just has to sit out, right?
Yep. Sort of blood on the clock tower.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Social deduction, kind of. Games from Pegasus Spiel. Alpaca. It's a competitive deck-building game about alpaca farming. You start with a deck with alpacas and fence materials, and then you're buying more cards to end up scoring points at the end of the game. That's about all the information they gave, but I kind of love it.
I'll have to mention it to David Graves.
Yeah, it's a fun theme. Another one from Pegasus Spiel that is also animal, and this one you heard me while I was writing this up. This game I would be so bad at. It's called Foxy. It's a memory game. So you're shown an image, a colorful image of an environment that has animals in it, and then cards are flipped over and you have to write down on your sheet how many of that type of animal you've seen, and cards keep getting flipped, but you also see more environments and more animals, and you keep having to add up how many of each animal you've seen until you see a fox, and then you say how many different animals you've seen, and then you go backwards and you count and see what you got right or not.
Oh my.
Yeah. I would be so bad at that, guys.
I did
this test for ADHD, and do you know how bad I was at it? Like, it was basically the same thing.
Yeah. It's sort of like Jordan wins, and who else
has some sort of memory?
Gets to two.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I would be so bad at it. But it's colorful and fun looking, but oh my.
Yes.
I don't think I'd ever play it. Lacerda. Lacerda Inventors. There were 120 backers who paid almost double so they could get an airshipped copy of this game a first month wave. Early. So that is out. They all have this game.
Yep.
It's supposed to start arriving in April to everybody else, and then later this year in retail.
Yes. It looks neat. I like all of his games. You only need so many of his.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, great news for you. I got more Lacerda coming up, because he never stopped making games.
I know the next one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Eagle Griffin Games will be crowdfunding Speakeasy in the second half of 2024. Which is one of the new heavier games that's coming out. I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago, actually, about the game itself, but...
Might have, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know... Yeah, no, I think I talked about this one. Anyway, that's his heavier one that's coming out. Also, they have a lighter Lacerda game called House of Phaedos coming out in May. I definitely talked about this one.
Yes, I remember you talking about it. So, I don't remember anything about
me
it.
Me neither, but I know I talked about it.
Yeah, he's done this thing where he has his big box games, and then he does a little box with a section of one of the big box games. Some have supposed to been okay, like Bot Factory is supposed to be a lot of fun. But the Lisboa one was supposed to be pretty blah, and so we'll see.
Yeah. August 2024, this year, Ravensburger, I guess this is almost me a year from when this was first released, Ravensburger will be releasing Lorcana Gateway. This is going to be a fixed set of 230-card decks, featuring... They named a whole bunch of things that I assume are part of Lorcana. I have not played the game. But basically, it's set up for newcomers to kind of teach them how to play the game, well as just having their decks. And then they said that it will change on a 12-month cycle as new things get released, and the Gateway brand will just kind of get changed up.
Okay.
But it's meant to be an entry into Lorcana.
Yeah, I think they're three sets in, I think, is what Paul said the other day. It seems like there's a new set all the time.
Well, that's the type of game, right?
All of those do that. Yeah. And they now have the Star Wars Unlimited competition going. We'll see how many of these can board gamers support, right?
Fair. The lineup at Gen Con last year seems to suggest a lot.
It was huge.
It's been pretty popular.
And it was hard to get for the first two sets. But I'm seeing it more and more on shelves.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
And finishing off with one that was crowdfunded and is now starting to come to backers and then eventually to retail. But that sounds really interesting. It's called Warren Wanderers. It's a two-player game from new designers Brody Kelly, Dennis Perlstein, and it's Claromancy Games. It's a wearable game. You are assembling a team of six characters that are shown by pins, and you wear these pins to show who's ready to play. So theoretically, you could have these pins on at like a big event, and then like you're dueling with people basically. On the pins, you can customize them with cards that have their weapons, their attacks, and the loot you're trying to defend. And then you're using that to kind of attack the other person. I think you actually have the full team of six on you in a set of six pins with different attacks. And it sounds like as you defeat your opponent's weaker defenses, there's things that then can get stronger and you can do combo attacks with your other characters. But this is all done, like there's no game board. It's all done with pins that you're wearing, basically.
Sounds different.
It's different. The pins are really cute. Okay.
So the pins will be collectors.
I want the pins, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
What I'm saying is I want the pins. I don't know about the game, but it sounds neat. And I kind of like the idea of being like, you know, this sounds like something you'd want to do at a convention where you have a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
And then they meet up and two people will fight each other, right?
Okay. Reminder, ToonCon coming up.
Yeah, ToonCon.
Last week of April. Tickets are on sale. The games are filling up fast this year. Shay's gonna be doing a
Dagger Heart session
Saturday night.
I have five spaces. I have two of them probably filled. Yeah. One for sure, probably a second one. So I have room for three. If you listen to the show, you're the first people that are officially hearing about it.
Yeah, we're not sure how they're gonna do registration.
So if you're interested, message us.
Yes.
Message us and we'll figure this out.
Message on Instagram or Facebook.
Yeah. to I'm this is my first time DMing, so if you want to come learn a game with me,
yeah,
let's have some fun.
Also, we're at Amazing Stories, our great sponsor, not this Friday, but the following Friday. That will be the last one before ToonCon, so...
And then again, come see us at ToonCon. Come chat with us.
Yeah, we'll be at ToonCon. And I got a message from a gamer group in Regina, and they are... they call themselves Play With Your Food.
Huh.
And they've been raising money since 2012 for homeless and food, or like people that need food. And this year, they are, or goal was 40K, but it looks like they're going to be in that 60K range this year. And they took COVID off, of course. They did an auction that raised about 12 grand, and this is led by Matt Robertson, I believe his name is, was the person who emailed me, and they do events, and they do weekly game nights, and they're just raising money for good, and want to draw attention to this, so if you know it, if you're in Regina, help support it. I know a bunch of their stuff is on Facebook, so good on them, and thank you for reaching out so we can draw attention to this. Great project.
Yeah, that's awesome. I haven't even heard about them, so that's fantastic.
Yes. Okay, we are into our main topic.
You're listening to Board on the Air on CFCR, and we're going to talk about downtime in board games.
Yes.
What is downtime in board games?
So downtime, in general, is the time between when you're playing and when you're playing again, right? So when you're not playing, when it's other people's turns. Some games... there is simultaneous play, so there is no downtime.
Yeah.
Other games, some turns are longer, and you're sitting there watching the game.
Yeah.
A lot of people will complain about a game if they say it has too much downtime. I think that's not specific enough as to why they don't like the downtime.
Okay.
I don't like downtime in games when I'm not invested in what other people are doing.
Fair enough. And considering you play a lot of Euros, where there's not a lot of player interaction, I would say that's where it is more blatant.
Yes. A couple of games that this really rang true for me was Tapestry.
Yep.
I could care less what anybody else at the table was doing because nothing they do was going to affect me, really.
Yep.
Viscounts of the West Kingdom was another one where I didn't feel like I needed to pay attention to what people were doing. So that one bothered me. Most games, I'm really invested in what everybody's doing and how they're doing it. I play games for the social side of it. I could care less if I ever win a game. And my record shows that. You know, I'll win about 30% of the games I play.
Yeah.
And I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah.
So for me, downtime isn't a bad thing.
Right.
As long as I'm invested.
Yeah.
Right?
I think I agree. When the downtime is useful, where you're using it to plan a turnout or you're using it to... figure something out on your board, and then, you know, it comes back around to you and you can do something. I think that even works if there's not a lot of player interaction. Or, like you said, if you need to see what people are doing. But sometimes it can happen where it's not worth... You need to plan your turn, but it's not worth it because things change by the time it gets around to you. But you also... It also doesn't necessarily matter what other people are doing. Like, it's a very specific feeling of being like, I can't really plan anything... It doesn't really matter what's happening out there either, so we're just going to have to wait.
Yeah.
And sometimes those turns can also take a while, and then I'm just kind of sitting there like, well, I don't really know what I'm doing, but here we are.
For sure. No, and that can play a factor, too.
That's actually my concern with Archaeologic.
Yeah.
Because I was sitting there for a good 15 minutes at one point trying different combinations of buildings out, and in a multiplayer, you're each asking a question, right? Sometimes people, it's the same as, Search for Planet X, where the last person goes, and so they can take multiple actions, but it's still like, you know, somebody could be trying a bunch of things out before figuring out what question they need to ask. My concern there is that there's just gonna be a lot of people kind of sitting there looking at stuff, Or you're sitting there and you're like, there's nothing I can do until it finally gets back around to my turn.
Well, and that's something like Five Tribes, yeah. right? Where the board is changing every turn. So it's really hard to plan ahead. And so and when it gets to your turn, you have to think it through. It's a thinky game. So
yeah.
That one can add some extra downtime. But I like the game enough to see what people are doing. And even though I can't really plan what I'm going to do, I'm still looking to see what's out there.
Yeah.
Right? Even though I know some of it may change, but I'm also looking to see what the best move the person who's playing could do.
Yeah. But like on the good side of downtime for say like a deduction game, that downtime is necessary so you can plan what you're going to do, right? Yes. Like you have to have some downtime or else you're sitting there going, I don't know what's happening. I don't know what questions to ask, right?
Yeah. I was just going to say, you know, the opposite of downtime is when there's games where you take an action and everybody follows you.
Yeah.
So you have no downtime. Something like Boone Lake from Alexander Pfister. I was so mentally drained at the end of that yeah. game because it is a heavy thinky game and you're always doing something. So you're always invested. So you're never down. You're never shutting down in that yeah. game. That can be very tiring as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if downtime, too much downtime for me, I get bored, right? If there's yeah. too much and there's nothing for me to do, I get bored. And that's the most dangerous thing is just like me sitting there going, okay, I've either planned my turn out already or I can't plan my turn out. And I just need to wait till it comes back around to me to figure out what I'm going to do, right? That's kind of the where yeah,
it's,
probably.
It's those longer turns where you aren't invested.
Yeah.
Or you're not, your planning is already done. So you're just waiting for it to come to you so it doesn't mess up your turn, right?
Yeah. I would say something like Castles of Burgundy actually does it really well because it does matter what other people are doing, right? So you're watching to see if they take the thing you need, but you also have time to kind of plan stuff out in the downtime. So I never feel during that game, or I've rarely felt during that game that like there's been too much downtime or not enough.
Yeah, and I see that a lot in worker placement games for myself because I'm always like, don't you go to that spot yeah. and block me.
I was thinking Raiders, right? Yeah, yeah. You're kind of like, okay, who's going to go where? When's going to be my, what am I going to do on my turn type thing? Yeah, absolutely. Well,
and especially when you bring out the gray and the white workers, you're yeah. like, I want that white worker. Or I have a white worker, but I want a white worker back. How does this happen? Is he going to take that one? Is he not going to take that one? And I think we played at five players on Friday, which I think is the most I've ever played with.
Yeah.
The turns are quick enough and you're watching everybody that when it gets to your turn, you're like, oh, right. What was I supposed to be doing? You know, so sometimes you get too invested and you don't plan your turn. So it causes a delay as well, right?
Yeah. The one I can say that was almost close for me was Grand Austria Hotel.
Yeah.
Because if you're the first player, it takes a really long time to get back to your turn and you can be sitting there and it's just like, I can't do anything and there's no point in planning because all of the cards are going to be, there are seven turns before mine.
Yeah.
Right? Or six turns before mine. So at that point, that was one where like specifically for the first player, I felt like there was almost too much downtime there.
For sure.
Great game otherwise. But.
Yeah. Okay. That's downtime for tonight. I'm David.
And I'm Shay.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Have a good night.